Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Look at our organization today, and you've seen what we've done, you know, from every aspect except on the playing field. We're probably the first class organization in the National Football League.
It's now time for The Defoe Show.
He had humble beginnings to his journalistic career and the brilliance that would follow, beginning as a lifestyle reporter for the Ann Arbor News in his beloved hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan. He would go on to become a sports feature writer for the Detroit News, where he had to wonder how much moose did Mitch Albom actually have in his hair. He would eventually bury Albom by writing a volume of books that even Albom couldn't compete with, despite the fact that he was going to that hospital every week to visit Maury on Tuesdays. We welcome to the program the king of the Midwest, and one of the great writers of all time, the brilliant John U. Bacon, joins us on 940 Winds, 1230 The Zone, and around the world on the iHeartRadio app. John U., how are you, my friend? Good to have you on the show. Happy New Year.
Likewise. A whole lot better after hearing you do John Facenda, the voice of God, and the great NFL films, The Frozen Tundra of Lambeau Field.
You know, it's great.
I love that. I need to start recording these doggone shows, Defoe. Holy mackerel. But I do have to point out one thing. You might want to check Mitch Albom's sales.
Yeah, those Tuesdays with Maury paid off.
Yeah. He did all right, I think.
Not too bad. Yeah, the hair was always a mystery to me. I don't know how he got it like that. Was he a descendant of Mel Kiper or Don King? I'm not sure.
That's all yours, pal.
great to have you on the program. Yeah, great to have you on the program, as always. And, of course, Luby immediately thought of you. And we love fanning the flames of idle rumors and speculation. That's what we do in the sports talk business. And you're familiar with this, although you're more inclined to go along the lines of credibility. But nonetheless, I mean, it's not like you're going to have a phony Adam Schefter site that triggers a phony story about Chan Gailey getting fired when you're talking about John U. Bacon. But once again, the rumors are surfacing about Jim Harbaugh, and that's right in the heart of your hometown, your home base there. And, of course, you've written so many things about Michigan football. We naturally wanted to come to you and get the latest on this, because you were breaking the story about Harbaugh, and legitimately so, just a few weeks ago, about the extension and all of that and the negotiations going on. So where, if anywhere, does that stand right now?
And here's the beauty part. I think I'm covering this about as well as anybody. There's some good reporters out there, Sam Webb and Chris Ballas and Angelique Shingalis. We're all pretty much on it. I can say with great confidence, and be ready to write this one down, nobody knows anything. We are. I mean, my sources are as good as they get, and, I mean, honestly, no one really knows what's going to happen. I'd still call it 75% Harbaugh stays at Michigan, 25% jumps to the NFL perhaps, although I'm not aware of any concrete offers from the NFL at this point. He might be a second-round kind of pick. But as each day passes, you know, you got to believe the odds go down of Harbaugh staying at Michigan. The contract sitting right there. It's, you know, all the details have been meted out, and it's ready to sign. And he's back here in town, and he hasn't signed it yet. So, and if he has signed it, there's no reason not to announce it, because that helps recruiting, that helps getting your staff together. And not least, he's got six assistant coaches whose contracts expire on Monday. I suspect their wives have something to say about this. So,
yeah,
so
once
we'll
you
see
get
what
the
happens next. But
back.
I can truly say right now, nobody knows anything, incredibly.
All right, so he hasn't said anything, and I don't know that it would matter if he did, because we had an incident many years ago following a Sugar Bowl game in New Orleans where we had Butch Davis on our show in the morning, and the team was traveling later that morning. We were broadcasting from New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl, Butch had been triumphant in that game, and he flat out said to us that if Paul D, who was the athletic director at the University of Miami at the time, had a contract for him to sign, he would sign it while he was on the plane. And then a few hours after he disembarked from that airplane, he was in a parking lot at a Denny's somewhere in Lighthouse Point, and he signed with the Cleveland Browns. So you never know. But it is, I guess, as he said, no indicators there from Jim Harbaugh. He's really playing a very, very quiet hand, is he not?
He is. Now, he has told, of course, the recruits, that he's going to be back. He's told the players that. I believe he's told the staff that. But until you get, you know, a pen on paper. I mean, the Butch Davis story, by the way, you guys were famous. That was classic.
it was
that might
true.
Have been the apex of all the coaching BS we all too often deal with. So that was incredible. So we're not at the Butch Davis level here, but we are in definitely uncharted territory.
I want to, you know, also clarify, we love Butch, and he's back here in town at FIU and doing a nice job with, and always has, wherever he's been. He's always managed to have success. Turn around North Carolina, although there was all that stuff there about speculation that maybe some of the kids weren't going to class, which can't imagine that was the case. All right, and interestingly, and I know we've talked about Ohio State and your thoughts about Ohio State and Urban Meyer many times here on the program, John U. Bacon. And I have to say, I usually root against Ohio State in, you know, going back to Craig Krenzel, in every game that they play. And they're among several teams that I feel that way about, including the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, who were turned into sacrificial lambs by Nick Saban and Alabama in their semifinal playoff game. But I have to say, I mean, for all of the talk about how Ohio State didn't belong in a championship game and shouldn't have qualified and a complete 180 on principle, not that that's popular today with politicians, but the Big Ten people deciding, okay, yeah, you qualify, no problem, we'll find you another 11,000 votes. But they were overwhelmingly impressive in this ball game. Did you not find them? I mean, did you know they were that good going into this semifinal matchup?
Yeah, I mean, like you, I expected the Buckeyes to give them a game. I did not think it was going to be a blowout, which has happened in the past with the Big Ten and the Final Four, of course. But I did not expect a almost complete dismantling of Clemson's defense. Fields was, 26 for 28, I believe, during that stretch.
Wow.
One of the most impressive halves of football I have ever seen out of anybody in a big game. So if I'm Alabama, I'm taking that film seriously. I'm sure Saban is. But and honestly, in the Midwest, they're the Buckeyes the last 20 years have pretty much been the only team to compete at that level, and that's what it's come down to. I mean, the Notre Dame gets in the Final Four occasionally, the college football playoffs, I should call it, but they get blown out. Michigan State got up there once, got blown out. Penn State's not quite at that level. Michigan has, of course, been, you know, half AOL the last 20 years. So the Buckeyes are kind of it. And you got to give Ryan Day credit. And these guys don't miss a beat. From Tressel to Urban Meyer to Ryan Day, you know, you're looking at probably three Hall of Fame coaches, certainly two. So things look pretty tough in Ann Arbor.
Well, we have a regular listener to the program. Of course, everybody has an alias or is also known as on this show or that is associated with the program, a guy named Big Al. And he keeps telling us, and all throughout the season, and even after the pick was made, that Tua was a mistake and Justin Herbert should have been the guy, which you could make a very strong case for after their respective rookie seasons. Justin Fields, you've seen far more of him than we have, of course, with Michigan and Ohio State being arch rivals, even though they didn't play this year. But what do you make of Justin Fields as a pro prospect? And I say this because here are the Miami Dolphins with Tua, and they do have the number 3 pick, which could lead them on a path where they might be able to acquire Fields. So would you take him? Obviously, with a high draft choice, you would, but what do you see him playing out as a pro?
He does seem to be more of a college quarterback than a pro quarterback, just his style of play. Honestly, it depends. What I've seen in the NFL, it depends almost entirely of who your OC is, who your head coach is, and who you've got in the front line. I've seen great prospects flame out. You have, too. Of course, I don't think quarterbacks going to the NFL realize how much they are at the mercy of forces they don't control. They take the most money wherever it goes. They get drafted too, of course. But if I'm a quarterback, I'm looking a lot more at who my play caller is going to be, who my head coach is going to be, and what kind of line you've got. So I think Justin Fields is the real deal, and you saw how tough he was also, which is an essential component in the NFL. That divides a lot of guys. But honestly, at the mercy of how it's running. Now, Flores, of course, at Miami's got it going pretty well for the most part. So I don't know if I'd – if you got two of there, I don't know if I'd – I don't know. You got a tough call. But I think it's the real deal. He's at the mercy. He's not like the golden boy of Eli Manning, the Manning brothers, others you've seen just walk right in, Elway, and dominate right away. I don't put him in that category, but if he's got the right handlers, he'll be formidable.
Well, and we're talking with John U. Bacon here. Follow him up. He is great on Twitter, at John U. Bacon. We always talk Michigan football with you, but the professional ranks in Michigan has long since struggled, but it is the team of the state, and I know you definitely referenced the Lions here and there. They sit there at 7, and a lot of Detroit Lion fans were disappointed that they didn't draft Tua last year when they actually were ahead of the Dolphins in the draft. They now have a coaching void. They now still need a younger quarterback, as Stafford is getting up there in age and has a massive contract. So you would think they're going to start looking toward the future. Do you think the Lions look at either a Wilson or a Fields to be their next signal caller?
We got to back it way up here, Luby. I am from the state of Michigan. What is this professional ranks you're talking about? I've heard
Green
about
press.
Them. Yes, I've seen them on TV. Dude, I am 56 years old. There's been one playoff victory in my lifetime. So dude, this is not getting mad at the Lions for their incompetence is like getting mad at Canada for being cold. You're asking me a technical question. That does not apply. When they figure out who the GM is, and the last one, of course, was abysmal, Bob Quinn, and so was the last coach, Matt Patricia. Find me the GM, find me the coach, then I'll answer your question. Until then, it really doesn't matter much. The biggest question that I have to answer next, of course, is Stafford. He's just finished his ninth year. Obviously a good to very good quarterback, but not a great one. So my guess is the first guy to come in, unless you think you're three players away from a playoff run, which they're not. My guess is Stafford, when he still has some values, gets sold, and then you're shopping for a quarterback. But again, people, this is the Lions. You can complain about the Dolphins all you want. We are not listening.
They still play at the Silver Dome?
You might as well. Hey, that was the last win,
cavernous Silver Dome.
They missed the Silver Dome.
Yeah, the golden era of the Silver Dome, that's the win.
The prolific and brilliant author John U. Bacon with us here on 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, and around the world on the iHeartRadio app. I guess we can finish with this. How much will the academic barometer be lowered if Urban Meyer takes a pro job and they lose the practical and the practice of ethical leadership and the character course that he's teaching at the university?
Mr. Defoe, no one is better at getting me in trouble than you are.
You have a good relationship with Urban. You always go there.
I mean, does he go to Jacksonville? I mean, what are you hearing now? You hear more
I
about this than
that.
We would.
I am hearing that. Yeah. Now, it's the... We all know how it goes. It's musical chairs until people are actually sitting down, so you don't make too many solid bets. But what I'm hearing is real, that the talks are real. He seems to take a year or two off, and then he gets back into the coaching game. He's a very intense guy, highly wired. I know him fairly well. so I think that his style of coaching, you're going to burn out every 5 or 6 years, basically. But those 5 or 6 years are pretty damn good. We don't know, of course, the big question is, can he handle the NFL? What works in college, the biggest thing that I think coaches don't adjust to from college to the pros and the colleges, you have all the power, you tell them what to do and they got to do it. And in the NFL, none of that's true. You're negotiating constantly. Agents run that league more than the players in many cases. So can you get there by consensus? Can you get there by compromise? And those are not skills that usually most, college guys have, college coaches. That said, Urban Meyer is a very, very bright guy, and he's 7-0 versus Michigan, so you're in my respect. I think the talk is real. And look, how many great coaches are there really in the NFL? 5, 6? About as many good coaches as there, great coaches there are, great quarterbacks. Not that many. So I bet he'd do okay.
This man has written on everything from Bo Schembechler to Cirque du Soleil to bullfighting. And that's why he's so great to have on a show. Really plugged in out there in the Midwest from Ann Arbor, Michigan. A great author. What are you working on? Anything special coming up, John U. Bacon?
Well, believe it or not, the previous book, The Great Halifax Explosion, speaking of things that aren't related to college football, I'm turning that into a play for Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels still lives here in town. The actor,
nice.
he's got his own theater in Chelsea, Michigan, right outside of Ann Arbor, and I'm working on that. And just finished the latest book, which also has nothing to do with college football, called Let Them Lead, Unexpected Lessons from America's Worst High School Hockey Team. I coached Ann Arbor Huron from 2004 in high school hockey. At the time, we were the ranked, I'm not kidding on this one, out of 994 teams, we ranked 994th. That's dead last.
That's impressive. Good for
Thank you.
You.
Thank you. Yeah, there you go. But we did turn it around, and 3 years later, we were number 53. So we passed 95% of the nation in 3 years, despite the fact, gentlemen, that I still hold the record as the worst player in Huron High School history. This is not false modesty. I can prove this empirically. I still hold the record for the most games in Huron uniform, 86, 3 years on varsity, got in every game, and the fewest goals, zero. Can't beat that.
Not exactly Fedorov, that's for sure. If you have any influence or have trouble casting the play once it's being staged, I'll send you a video of Luby doing Shakespeare in the Park from several years ago.
Here's the big question, Defoe.
Yeah.
Is he willing to get blown up?
Honestly,
he's willing to do anything. Yeah.
All right, then we got our guy.
You didn't see our Luby Against the World series where he got flattened by an Outland Trophy candidate over at the campus of FAU trying to play some football in practice one day. John, you always
Google,
a pleasure.
Please tell me I can Google that.
No, there is. I'll send you the link. It actually happened. Yes, I got rocked by a DB, and I got rocked by a center who was 350 pounds and 6'8".
Yeah.
I will only say I am listening.
Concussion protocol ever since. And you can tell it's affected and impacted his whole mindset. Thanks, John. You always a pleasure, my friend. Happiest of New Year's, and thanks so much for joining us as always.
Always a ton of fun, gentlemen. A ton of fun and a ton of trouble. Thank you.
Exactly.
Happy New Year. Thanks. Yeah, we had him fighting off the ropes there on that Urban Meyer stuff, huh? He is very close to Urban Meyer. Interesting there, Luby. As he says, we put the chocolate coating on the broccoli. Got a couple of things there with John U. Bacon, always a special guest here on the program. We love talking to John U., and we thank him for taking time to be with us and putting up with our nonsense. All right, coming back with a lot more, I'm Jeff DeForest. He's Mike Luby Lubitz, 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, around the world on the iHeartRadio app on his fine Wednesday. Take you up until 10 o'clock, The Greek at 3 o'clock on 940 Wins and the iHeartRadio app. And, of course, tomorrow we have Old School with Tony Segretto in the 8 o'clock hour, and then Friday out at Gulfstream Park. Always look forward to our Degenerate Friday shows. Our guys have been hot, including the professor. He started out real hot last week, Luby. I don't know if you had a chance to track that because you were on vacation.
By the way, and it has been confirmed,
yes,
and we need a break desperately bad, Chan Gailey has resigned.
There you go.
Chan Gailey has resigned. So even though that's what I was saying, when Flores was saying that we're not going to make any changes, they didn't make any changes. They made him resign.
That's interesting, right? Was that one of those things? I tell you what, you can turn in your resignation, or we're going to let you go. Or do you think you just got tired of the whole thing? All right, back with more in a moment. Now that, was that a Shula resignation?
Yes.
Where he said, you know what? I couldn't be happier than to announce Jimmy Johnson as my successor. That was believable. It's 9:25.
You give a mind test, you give it a door test.
What's the door test?
All right, listen to me. You pull her right where she is, right? Before you get out of the car, you lock both doors. You get out of the car, you walk over to her. You bring her over to the car. You take out the key, put in the lock, open the door for her. Then you let her get in. Then you close the door for her. Then you walk around the back of the car and you look through the rear window. If she doesn't reach over, lift up that button for you so you can get in, dump her.
Just like that?
Listen to me, kid. If she doesn't reach over, lift up that button for you so you can get in, that means she's a selfish broad, and all you're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. You dump her, and you dump her fast.
The morning just isn't right without Defoe. We now return to the Defoe Show.
One of the many cool things that's happened with us on the program, and remember, it was a pleasure, right? Chaz Palminteri coming into the studio there. spending about 15, 20 minutes with us, explaining that whole thing about how the Bronx Tale evolved.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Of course, the Mush character. Who doesn't know a Mush, Luby? You could be, me too. I mean, considered a Mush at different times, right? Because you always love that when I text you, it's over.
Yeah, that's two plays into a ball. The most dreaded thing, Professor, and I ever get from you is that.
It's never over till we say it is. That's for sure. That's the way it is, right? Everything coming down to the wire when it comes to playing the point spreads. Bills, Colts. That's coming up on Saturday. 7 points, the Bills. Would you be willing to lay 7 with the Bills, Mike Lubey-Lubitz? 7 with the Bills.
I don't know.
Indianapolis Colts, choking dogs, Philip Rivers. They look like crap in the second half there against Jacksonville. The Bills look like a juggernaut. I would give them a shot to. Are we going to be in for a rude awakening when the Bills, if they do face the Chiefs for the right to go to the Super Bowl in the AFC Championship game? Is that a possibility? That's Chalk City. I know that. But are we in for a rude awakening where the Chiefs suddenly go and subscribe to your magic wand theory and become whole again? Put up like 48 on the Bills and shut them out?
I really think that's what's going to happen, but I had a rude awakening yesterday.
Yes.
With,
you have to download that clip.
Mr. Shock,
and use it.
So who knows?
I love that thing. I mean, you have to use that as one of our rejoins there, Libby. Little production discussion right here on the air. Because that was great. You said, well, you know what? Looks like they're bored to tears, the Kansas City Chiefs. And the guy said, how the hell do you know that? Mr. Blutarski. Back with more in a moment. A little history of the NBA coming up here. It's going to be a lot of fun. Interesting conversation on tap on 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, and the iHeartRadio app. We'll be back with that in a moment. Now that.
The time.
Gorgeous out there, Olivia. It's 932. Leslie Visser, oh, lovely and talented one. Thanks for joining us here on the celebration.
You know, I cannot believe the women that you guys have managed to have relationships with. The Duke asked me, he said the other day, you know, haven't Shirley and the Mustang moved away and joined some ashram by now? Are with these people?
The only way to get your morning started is with Defo, joined by Luby, right here on The Defo Show.
Listen, baby, ain't no mountain high, ain't no valley low, ain't no river wide enough, baby.
Beautiful day shaping up here in South Florida. Great to be with you. Jeff DeForest, Mike Lubey-Lubitz with you. 940 Wins, 1230 The Zone, and around the world on the iHeartRadio app. We were turned on to this gentleman and his latest literary effort by the aforementioned, we didn't really mention her, but we always do, the lovely and talented Leslie Visser. And, of course, Marvin Gaye. This is interesting because I want to say that I had the over on the national anthem in the 1983 NBA All-Star Game. And it's triggered a great book and, of course, some great work from Pete Croato, who joins us here on the show. The new offering is From Hang Time to Prime Time, and it takes a look at how the NBA has evolved. It's a monster now. They're looking for $2.5 billion for an expansion franchise if they expand. Pete, Happy New Year, and welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And, Leslie is listening. Thank you for steering me to this. I appreciate it.
Well, you may not appreciate it
in
a few
luck.
Minutes here. We've buried many an author and career here on the show. No, actually, we've been a good luck charm for a lot of people, except for ourselves. We're still in the same spot we were 10.5 years ago, and everybody else has gone on to great heights that's appeared here on the program. Well, tell us about the evolution. Yes.
Well, I was going to say, you're in Miami. I'm here in a basement in Ithaca, New York, where it's about 30 degrees right now. So I think you guys have one up on me. So.
Having attended Syracuse and being very familiar with the weather conditions in upstate New York, I believe it's always 3 degrees in Ithaca,
yeah,
New York.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pete Crowderwell with us here, and you've written for many different organizations and got involved, of course, with this story about Marvin Gaye and the national anthem. And it was good having you over on that. What did he go? Like 2 minutes, 37 seconds. And that inspired a lot of different things. Yes. Tell us about the evolution of this and how this all came about, this book.
Well, I mean, I wrote a piece on Marvin's anthem for Grantland, the late, great ESPN pop culture and sports website, 2013. And writing about that anthem, which I grew to love and know very well because I listened to it a billion times, two things struck me. First, that there was so much material I couldn't use that came from great sources and research. And the other thing, too, was just how that anthem marked a pivot in the NBA's evolution. Really, if you look at what happens after 1983, when Marvin Gaye sings that anthem, the NBA changes completely. It becomes an entertainment league. It becomes a league that truly wants to represent what's on the floor, which are these graceful and super athletic black men. That it wasn't going to kowtow to the audiences that favored baseball or college or pro football. So, after writing that story and seeing those two things develop, I wanted to explore what happened before the anthem and after the anthem. And that's what led to this book, and that's what led to me talking to you two gentlemen this morning.
Talking to Pete Carano, and the book is From Hang Time to Prime Time, and discusses many interesting aspects of the NBA. I do remember, and the NBA seemed to be on the brink of disaster, and it's been pointed out a few times now, especially when the NBA was playing the games in the bubble, and how the league has evolved, where they used to actually have tape delay performances and broadcasts of championship round games, which seems like an absolutely atrocious position to be in if you're a modern American sports league. And I remember it seemed like the league was on a brink of disaster before they came up with the revolutionary concept of shared revenues among owners and players. And that negotiation is largely credited, I guess, with salvaging the league and bringing it to the or being the platform by which the league was able to get to the level it's at today.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the CBA of 1983, the collective bargaining agreement, went a long way. Went a long way toward putting all the franchises on equal footing. I would also say that a lot of the NBA success from the 1980s on has to do with optics, and a big part of that is the drug deal or the drug policy that was enacted that same year, a few months after the CBA, because again, a lot of the league's ails were a lot of people thinking that, oh, well, you know, the league has too many guys that are on drugs and blah, 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 blah. But so the policy that was enacted not only showed the casual sports fan, that the league meant business, that it was serious about putting on its best face, but it also treated drug issues as a real problem, not something to be ashamed of. I mean, it gave players three chances, it gave them opportunities to rehabilitate. So, yeah, I mean, the CBA, as you pointed out, was a really great start. I think the drug policy kind of was the cherry on top, so to speak.
There's always a theory out there in sports, and I guess it's not necessarily as applicable as it might have been at one time, that you need major market teams to be successful. And with that being said, how has the NBA survived with the New York Knicks being a doormat? Yeah. Although we have Tibbs as coach of the year already this year. We've already filed our ballot on that. But we have that team with four wins already. We didn't expect them to top three. But how important is that? How critical is that? Because right around that same time, of course, you had the advent in the league of Bird, Magic, and Michael, which many people feel was the springboard for the league to have the kind of monumental success they're enjoying today.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I mean, you brought up Bird and Magic. What Bird and Magic brought was they brought in a built-in audience that knew them from that great but from that great rivalry that they had at Michigan State and Indiana State with that NCAA championship game in 79. So there was a giant audience that was waiting for that, was eager to see what happened. Now you have that carryover to the NBA. And also, you have with Bird and Magic, you have a built-in rivalry beyond that game. One's black, one's white. one, you know, you have two, one player is with an East Coast team that everyone knows. Another player is with a West Coast team everybody knows. So you have these, you have this rivalry that comes up, and the NBA plays that to the hilt, and so does CBS Sports. You know, if you talk to Leslie, I'm sure, you know, she will tell you, she can quote you chapter and verse on just how important that rivalry was for NBA coverage, you know, for the television coverage, because it got people excited. You know, you got people into these games because you had, you know, whether you had a villain and a good guy, depending on who you rooted for. And to go back to your question now about the New York Knicks, and as a lapsed New York Knicks fan, I feel that pain, and I am well aware of the team's travails. That, you know, I don't think a player needs to be in New York now, and I don't think New York needs to be successful necessarily, because because the game is global, but also the way that we see the game and we read about the game, it has changed tremendously. You have social media, you have YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. You have all these ESPN, you know, covers the games. So you don't really need to have a player, a star in a major market like LA or New York to really gather interest in the league. In fact, as the last 20 years have shown, you don't even need to have New York really be all that successful to generate interest in the NBA.
Well, and then to underscore that, Pete, it's funny Defoe brought that up, but it used to be that you need to be a big market, especially in the NBA, because it was a fledgling league. But you brought up the last 20 years. That's literally LeBron's career. And LeBron has played, yes, in Miami and L.A., but when he was on the map and when he resurrected his fame, because in Miami he was hated, was in Cleveland.
Sure.
The Greek Freak,
yeah,
is the back-to-back MVP, yeah, in Milwaukee. Kevin Durant made his bones, not in Golden State, not in Brooklyn, in Oklahoma City. So it's funny that the NBA is sort of showcased that you don't have to be in a big city. You just have to be talented and be flashy and special, and it doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah, the thing is, that's a good point. The thing is that you don't have to, the NBA is not in the situation where it has to knock on doors and sell you their product. The NBA has become such a worldwide entertainment operation that if you're a great player, you will be found out. You will be discovered. You will not hide under, you're not going to be, if you're playing in Denver or you're playing in Miami or Cleveland, if you're really good, people will find you. But back in the 1980s, that was not the case. You had to hope that CBS would air your game on a Sunday. You had to hope that maybe Sports Illustrated would profile you. You had to hope that you had a great game at an All-Star game, and that might turn your career around. If you look at someone like Tom Chambers, who was a non-entity before he was the MVP of the 87 All-Star game. So it's completely different. And the media, especially the media and the way that we consume these games, is completely different than it was in the 1980s, the 1990s, and maybe even like the first half of the 2000s, you could say.
Talking with Pete Carano, and has a new book out about the NBA. Fascinating stuff, as you could tell. Hang Time, From Hang Time to Prime Time, and out right now for your reading consumption. It's funny, too, when you're talking about the star caliber and having the big cities, I do remember covering games at the Forum in Inglewood back in the 70s when the biggest star there was Chick Hearn, and we were watching Cornell Warner chuck bricks out of the corner. And it didn't hurt him any that they orchestrated the trade for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and then got Magic and Worthy and arrested a crew there. And that certainly helped light a fire under fans all around the country as they enjoyed watching the Showtime Lakers go out there. How much of an influence, and I always wonder this, and I guess, you know, there are many money streams now that the NBA can take advantage of, not the least of which is their relationship with China. How much of an influence would you say was Yao Ming's entry into the NBA overall, and how would you qualify the impact now? We see it all the time. You mentioned Luka, and we see so many other European players that what we thought were just finesse-oriented losers. But they're having a huge impact on the NBA, and the game has changed, and as you said, evolved to where even the U.S. is suspect bringing dream teams in to win Olympic gold medals against the rest of the world.
Yeah, no, the game is so, I mean, if you look at an NBA roster, it almost looks like a United Nations meeting.
Yeah.
You have players from all over the world that are represented. And you can make, if you created a list of the top 10 players right now, maybe half are from the, or come from outside the U.S. I mean, it is insane. And you're absolutely right, Jeff. I mean, back in the day, like in the 1980s, even the 1990s, if your team drafted a European player, your first thought was, oh no. Yeah. Because their skill set hadn't caught up to the rest of the world, and that is no longer the case. There are so many great players coming out of Spain, places in Europe, Africa. If you look at Joel Embiid, it's become a global game. As for Yao Ming, what that did was, and I talk about this in the book, China has an absolutely huge NBA fan base. If you remember when Yao Ming was voted into All-Star games, a lion's share of those votes came from China. I mean, it was open up, the voting was open up internationally, and Yao Ming got millions of votes from China. But what Yao Ming's presence did was it got a whole lot of people from a corner of the globe into the game. Into NBA basketball, because everybody likes to root for the hometown kid. So it doesn't matter if that kid is from Brooklyn or from Miami or from, you know, Aberdeen, New Jersey. If you have a connection with someone that's in the NBA, you're going to follow them. And if that country has, I don't know how many billions of people, they're going to follow that player and what they do. And that's what Yao Ming does. And that's what all these players do. If you look at, you know, all these great players, Luka and Giannis and, Joker over in Denver, they all bring with them fans from where they were born. And in addition to fans that are in the U.S. or fans, fans of their home team. So it's crazy. It's a complete global game. And I think that's great.
Yeah, you always have to wonder, where do they get $100 million to pay Hassan Whiteside to watch cartoons and sit on the bench? I mean, the money is so enormous, and much of that driven by the expansion to worldwide levels with the game and the massive interest in the game all around the world. Hey, book sounds great. Absolutely. And just looking at some of the reviews on this thing, fantastic, from Hang Time to Prime Time. Pete, wish we had more time to speak with you. I hope you'll do it again very soon. Pete Corrado of the book From Hang Time to Prime Time, available right now, the usual sources. Thanks so much for being with us, and I hope you'll do it again. Hopefully we didn't do enough to alienate you to tell Leslie to lose your number.
No, well, you know what? My career has been in tatters since like the early 2000s, so this is no problem. No risk on my end, guys.
Not a big enough disgrace not to consider a return engagement. All right. Hey, thanks so much, Pete. It was a pleasure. Great meeting you here on the show, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff. My pleasure. Have a good one. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot. Pete Corrado from Hang Time to Prime Time. Interesting. Off a national anthem, huh? I always liked Grover Washington when he was playing the anthem for the 76ers. Very haunting stuff. Back with more in a moment. Now that.
The time.
It's 9:50, as Moses Malone would say, folk.
Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. Daddy.
There is nothing better than Defo. Welcome back to The Defo Show.
We're at the wire. We're flat out of time. We will have a poll question tomorrow. Which spot has become more intrusive to your television enjoyment? Chris Berman for CarShield or Joe Willie? Looking a little worn, talking about Medicare supplements. We'll get into that tomorrow on the program. Something to look forward to. We'll go old school with Tony Segreto tomorrow, and a deal Volkswagen Degenerate Friday from Gulfstream coming up on Friday, the week flying by. Hope you guys have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 as we leave you. Now that.
The time.
Year is flying by already. It's January 6th. It's 10 o'clock.
Let's go to eat a damn snack.
Look what they done to my show.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.